And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Monday, February 25th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave, and all of his noise. Hello there.
Hey, Melody. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Yeah, we missed you. And I believe I told the listener, I'm sure I have, that you're the new pop of
yes,
the family.
Indeed. So, thank you very much. It's quite a thrill.
Congratulations. And can't wait to meet the little fella. But no congratulations on gold. But we've been having a good week, a good and bad. For the past week, a couple of weeks or so, we have a little pressure on gold today, down $1.50, so not so bad, $1,327. Silver was down 4 pennies today at $1,596. We did have a high of $1,606. Platinum was up $10 at $856, and palladium pushed up over $1,500 at $1,543, up 3%. I mean, it's incredible what palladium is doing, and you know, it's... where she goes, nobody knows, and I'd be very dangerous play on palladium at this point in time. But $44, up 3%.
Keep those strikes coming.
And of course, I believe a lot of that was due to the trade discussions with China moving along supposedly fairly nicely and so forth, and the extension was granted. The deadline was March 1st, and we'll probably talk about that a little later on in the program. But the USDX today was down 0.08 at 96.40. Crude oil was down $1.86 at 55.40. You kind of expect that to be a little bit stronger with the trade talks going along smoothly, but hey, again, it just prime examples of manipulated markets, ladies and gentlemen. Prime examples. The Dow was up 60 off the high of the day, though, 26,091. The NASDAQ was up 26 at 7,554. The S&P was up 3 at 2,796. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was the S&P up 3. 2,796. 10-year yield, 2.67%. Big week in auctions this week, although it's not a record week for auctions. I think the record was $294 billion, I think, early last year. This week, they're looking to have 230-something billion in auctions this week. So still a pretty hefty week needed for these treasury auctions. And, you know, Dave, there's a lot of reports going on this week, beginning on it's funny, they have all these Fed presidents out there talking, doing speeches all week long. I think Jerome Powell is supposed to be in D.C. this week. You have a ton of reports coming out beginning today. We had wholesale inventories, Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index. We have the housing starts tomorrow. I mean, all kinds of real estate mortgage application reports coming out, factory orders, durable good orders. We have the fourth quarter GDP report. I mean, what a week it is going to be, and I think very little focus will be come from these reports, because you have President Trump meeting in Vietnam with North Korea's president, and also you have Michael Cohen that'll be testifying. So what a week to have all these reports. No one's going to be paying any attention to the markets, Dave. Hopefully gold will be paying attention to these reports. So actually, I'm expecting some pretty weak numbers, Dave.
Yeah, let's sometimes below the radar is a good thing. So maybe we'll have that kind of luck this week.
All right. And I don't know, I'm kind of missing our first report for today. I was all excited about the all the reports. Would you like to start off, Dave, please?
Well, we know that President Trump announced yesterday that the U.S. would be delaying the increase of tariffs on Chinese goods as talks to end the trade war between the two largest economies of the world continue. Trump tweeted the following: "I am pleased to report that the U.S. has made substantial progress in our trade talks with China on important structural issues, including intellectual property protection, technology transfer, agriculture, services, currency, and many other issues. As a result of these very productive talks, I will be delaying the U.S. increase in tariffs now scheduled for March 1st. Now, that delay comes less than a week before the 90-day trade war truce agreed to by Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping was set to expire. After the original March 1st deadline, U.S. tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods were, and in fact are, set to increase from 10 to 25%. As we've reported numerous times, most economists and business leaders warned that such an increase would be even more damaging to the U.S. economy, as they reportedly have been to date, Melody.
You know, it'll be interesting to see, because China came out and agreed that they do their $1 trillion. They confirmed that their $1 trillion spending spree here in the United States over, what, a six-year period until 2024, I guess, until right before the, not this election, but the next election, and after, if Trump is reelected after his second term. So I don't know, the timing is interesting and what they'll be purchasing and so forth and what type of, but of course, Dave, if our economy slows down, timing is everything. If our economy slows down, would our deficit automatically drop?
Well, other things being equal, yeah. That's the question, other things being equal. You know, you've got inflation, interest rates, a number of other factors that play into that number. And, you know, who knows, between now and then, maybe there'll be some grand infrastructure deal, another trillion or two to go along with more than $2 trillion in debt from the 2017 tax cuts and the subsequent spending plan. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. A lot of uncertainty continues as, we're getting ready to enter the last month of winter of 2019. Will it go out like a lion or a lamb?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, the first three, I can't believe the first 2 months of 2019 have come and gone, but it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But, on Friday, Trump said that some of the biggest decisions will come from either himself or President Xi with their meeting that they have, and hopefully we'll continue. What's really interesting is, you know, one minute you hear that there's absolutely no way that there's going to be any changes on the technology end of the deal, and then all of a sudden, it looks like this technology transfer and this intellectual property protection doesn't seem to be an issue. So we'll see how this all comes out and about. But it's timing is everything, you know, Dave. We got auctions, trade auctions this week, treasury auctions.
Proof's in the pudding. I don't believe it myself, but call me a skeptic. I just think that there's been a track record here, and I think for the very reason you just spoke of, I, for one, am going to need to see something, not just in writing, but actually see it come to fruition before I believe there's actually a substantive deal afoot.
Yeah. And you know, China's economy, I mean, they're having difficulties, they're banking and everything, and they put in trillions, billions of dollars, I should say, you know, stimulus and everything. So it's all countries are the same. And we're going to talk a little bit about this a little bit later on in the program, but there's still like all of these economists and everything that, hey, by the end of 2020, we're going to be in a recession. And usually all these great so-called economists that talk about recessions by a certain period and so forth, they're always late to the game. They're all They don't want to say we're in one now or one's right around the corner. They at least will extend it to 2020 and so forth. But they're coming out, and of course, it's like everybody knows it.
Yeah, they don't want to jump the gun, but yet they don't want to miss the boat. You know, it's credibility crisis on either end. And you know, they should just stop guessing and, you know, well, you know, we'll see.
So there was another report out about these economists talking about the recession at the end of 2020.
Yeah, as you were saying, you know, roughly half the nation's business economists say they think the U.S. Will slip into recession by the end of next year. That's 2020. Three quarters envision such a downturn beginning by the end of the following year, that is 2021. You know, that finding comes from a latest survey by the National Association for Business Economics of its member economists. Only 10% of them say they foresee a recession beginning this year, 2019. At the end of the other extreme, only 11% expect the economy to avoid a recession through 2021. Now, you know, the economy began its expansion, as we know, in June of 2009, when the Great Recession officially ended. If it endures beyond June this year, the expansion will become the longest on record. Boy, they must be having fun with those numbers right now, Melody. you know, compared with other expansions, the current one has been, quote, tepid, with an annual economic growth averaging just slightly over 2%.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the survey by the NABE found that 39% of economists foresee one rate increase. 26% say they think the Fed is going to raise rates twice this year. And I guess the other half don't think the Fed will raise at all. But what's interesting in this, I don't mean to top off, but I want to tell the listeners, because we're going to talk about your article in the newsletter this week, but I also put something in there about the Mississippi bubble, France's biggest bubble. And what's interesting is the parallels between the Mississippi saga and the current monetary experiments following the 2008 crisis. It is amazing. You both have both episodes start with a financial and economic crisis, the threat of deflation. Both are followed by a miracle monetary cure that inflated bubbles across various asset classes. At points in 2018, the U.S. stock market was trading at higher valuation level than at any time apart from the dot-com bubble. And on a dividend yield basis, the S&P 500 index remains somewhat more expensive than the Mississippi company at its peak. So it's really an interesting parallel what's going on. And we have the same bankers. We have the same these biographers talk about what the central banks are doing now is exactly what was recommended back then. And from this perspective, it could be argued that notwithstanding the failure of the Mississippi system, Law's banking successors have been Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, Mario Draghi. You know, don't forget about Greenspan. So it relates very well to what you've written about the debt. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on in the program. So,
well, I'll tell you, as Yogi Berra once said, you know, it's deja vu all over again.
Yeah, and it's so the day of reckoning, ladies and gentlemen, come. They can put it off. They can, you know, push it beyond what any one of us think is capable when they have those tools at their fingertips. But eventually, ladies and gentlemen, it will come home. And I guess this is good news, Dave. We do have, as I mentioned earlier, that Trump is going to Vietnam. He's going to hold the second summit with Kim Jong-un later this week with really no expectations of a final deal, but, you know, some raised hopes for an official peace of the peninsula. The two leaders are set to meet in Vietnamese capital Hanoi, both Wednesday and Thursday. It's, what, 8 months after the historic summit in Singapore?
Time flies.
Oh, I know it. President Trump, speaking in Washington on the eve of his departure, said he believed he saw eye to eye with Kim and that they had developed a very, very good relationship.
Oh, Lord. In another tweet this morning, Trump stressed the benefits to North Korea if it gave up its nuclear weapons. You know, he said, with complete denuclearization, North Korea will rapidly become an economic powerhouse. Without it, just more of the same. Chairman Kim will make a wise decision, end quote. Now, a South Korean presidential spokesperson told reporters in Seoul today the two sides might agree to a formal end of the 1950 to 53 Korean War, which the North has long called for as a major step towards normalizing ties with the South and the West. The possibility is there, the spokesperson said when asked if an end of the war declaration was on the agenda. And in a speech last night, as Melody alluded to, Trump appeared to play down any hope of a major breakthrough, saying he'd be happy as long as North Korea maintained its pause on nuclear weapons testing. Trump said, "I'm not in a rush. I don't want to rush anybody. I just don't want testing. As long as there's no testing, we're happy," end quote.
Well, they, if you remember, it was September of 2017 was the last time that North Korea had conducted its nuclear test. And we all remember all those series of tests that had happened prior to that. And yes, it was quite unnerving. And he was pushing. But do you think that I don't think he will denuclearize 100%, and that's almost to, I think, what everyone is now coming to accept. You know, as long as he doesn't test, we're okay.
Yeah.
And that he will appreciate, the people will appreciate more of the economic benefits that they will receive. And, oh, I do believe also that if they come to terms and so forth, they will become, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they'll be an economic powerhouse, but that certainly is what's being promised them.
Yeah, even, you know, some, you know, more than insignificant aid, not just from the U.S., but I would expect from a coalition of Western nations. Could be on the horizon there. That's a big incentive, I think, for Kim to mind his P's and Q's.
Well, we have to mind our P's and Q's ending of this first segment of the program. Today we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, you caught me humming along there, singing along there. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Great prices on everything. One of the bargains, I'll talk about this when we come back from the break. Well, I'll talk about it now. Mint State 63 $10 Liberty gold pieces. There is steel at $780. $780. $30 more than a Mint State 61 $10 Liberty gold piece. And the reason that I say that this is a steel at $780, I went back to my chart, my price list of 2009, and I'm recalling this off the top of my head. I don't have it at my fingertips. I should. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. There was a huge spread. I'm talking like $600. December 7th, 2009, Mint State 63 $10 Liberty gold pieces would have sold for over $1,600.
Wow.
Mint State 63 $10 Liberty gold pieces.
No, I was just going to say, boy, now there's something that holds a value.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, looking at the 62 to the 63, there was a $1,600 spread between a Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece and the Mint State 63. An $800 spread. Today there is a $30 spread.
Yikes.
So if you're looking for a deal, Mint State 63 $10 Liberty gold pieces, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And Carla had some difficulties with her phone. So you can call and leave a message here at Discount Gold and Silver if her phone is not... I mean, that's an incredible steal. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We're kind of talking about things that are going around, Dave, and I find this very interesting and not a lot of discussion on Taiwan.
Well, you know, volatility is, all of a sudden ramped up in the Taiwan Strait, where the U.S. sent two Navy ships through today as the U.S. military increased the frequency of movement through that strategic waterway. And that, of course, is despite opposition from China. The voyage risks further raising tensions with China, but, you know, it's likely going to be viewed reportedly by self-ruled Taiwan as nothing more than a sign of support from the Trump administration amid growing friction between Taipei and Beijing. Now, the movement of the U.S. ships comes as Trump said the U.S. and China are very, very close to a deal, as we reported in the top of the show, to end months-long trade war that's disrupted global markets. The U.S. Navy's passage through the Taiwan Strait also comes just days before the summit between Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
So these ships going through the strait is to send a message prior to these meetings?
No.
And again, I guess there's no such thing as coincidences, correct?
I agree with you.
You know, the two ships that were identified as destroyer Stethem, and a Navy cargo, an ammunition ship, Caesar Chavez.
Ah, the great California grape union leader from the, when was that, in the 80s, I guess.
Very interesting. The 112-mile-wide Taiwan Strait separates, of course, Taiwan from China. And we don't have any formal ties with Taiwan, but is bound by law to help defend this nation, and it is main source of arms. I don't know if any of this is coming out of Congress, but this is what we're doing anyway, or if it needs to come out of Congress, but hey.
I think the Pentagon and the Prez are on their own in this one. I think they're just, you know, they're able to do their cruising around without, you know, congressional approval. You know, we know that China's time and time again has sent military aircraft and ships to circle Taiwan on drills during the past few years. And, you know, it's worked to isolate the island internationally, whittling down its few remaining diplomatic allies, you know, the U.S. included. You know, earlier this year, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency released a report that described Taiwan as the primary driver for China's military modernization, which it said had made major advances in recent years. Taiwan's one of a growing number of flashpoints in the U.S.-China relationship, which also includes its military posturing in the South China Sea, where the U.S. also has been conducting occasional, quote, freedom of navigation patrols. Just to remind Xi and his forces that we're still a player in those parts of the world.
Awesome. Oh, well, I don't know if that's awesome.
But there you have it.
All right. Well, you know, Dave, there's also Russian TV lists targeted U.S. military sites.
Fascinating. Very fascinating.
Yeah, do you want to go on and continue about that?
Yeah, excuse me. Let's see here. You know, definitely a pleasant thought, tongue-in-cheek for sure. Russian state television has listed U.S. military facilities that Moscow would target in the event of a nuclear strike. It's also said that the hypersonic missile that Russia's developing would be able to hit them in less, and listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, 5 minutes. We've talked a little bit about, you know, this, the development of this supersonic, actually hypersonic missile. The targets that Russian TV displayed included the Pentagon, the presidential retreat in Camp David, and a number of other places throughout the country as well. Now, the report, which is said to be unusual even by the sometimes bellicose standards of Russian state TV, was broadcast just last evening. It comes days after Vladimir Putin said that Moscow was militarily ready for a Cuban missile-style crisis if the U.S. wanted one. Tensions are rising over Russian fears that the U.S. might deploy intermediate-range nuclear missiles in Europe. Boy, it's it doesn't calm down much, does it, Melody?
Well, I wonder if he isn't just spouting off, you know, because of what's going on in Venezuela. I mean, the U.S. says it has no immediate plans to deploy, you know, missiles in Europe. And, you know, the U.S. has pretty much dismissed his warnings as disingenuous propaganda.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, you know, on the one hand, our withdrawal, announced withdrawal from that INF treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, has Putin and the generals especially probably, you know, with some heightened concern. On the other hand, I mean, it is telling that we reportedly, we the U.S. reportedly doesn't have. We don't have a new missile that we could deploy in Europe at this time, nor is there apparently plans to manufacture them.
So again, just another possible hotspot, but propaganda it may be, but on the other hand, usually isn't there a little bit of truth when it comes to propaganda? Even our propaganda has a little bit of truth. That's what
volatility and uncertainty, Melody. That's what it is in my mind from an investor standpoint. In a series of factors that affects the precious metal markets.
Yes, it does. And, when we talk about the precious metals markets, when we talk about the economy, very few radio programs talk about the economy like we do. They might have their special topics that they'll include briefly and so forth, but I don't think there's any program out there that talks about the economy the way we do and dissect the reports that are given to us and to bring some truth and some realistic we're trying to bring them in and to show just how far off basis our economy is based on what you see in the stock markets. David Stockman, Dave, today came out and he made some, it was an interview, I believe he was on Fox, and he said the day of reckoning is here. He says, get out of the market, get out of the bond market. Now, this is David Stockman talking. So, we'll have to dissect that interview from Fox and see what else he said on that. I'm sure it comes from an article that he wrote. So, but it is changing. The workforce is also changing in this country. Young and less educated men are losing their place. There's no place for them to work. Technology, automation, shrinking unions. It's all changing. Family dynamics have transformed the role of men in the workforce. Male high school graduates either need to pursue higher education or enter lower paid industries traditionally that was dominated by women. Technology, globalization, shrinking of unions have led to lower wages and disappearing blue collar jobs. And of course, a fiat dollar, which has allowed all this to happen. But a Harry Holzer, he's an economist at Georgetown University. This was his little report. He's a former chief economist for the Department of Labor. And he said, in their place, unskilled jobs in healthcare, we have an aging population, and secretarial work are booming. Occupations traditionally that were dominated by women. But sociologists have found young men reluctant to take what they perceive to be a woman job.
Wouldn't it be nice, Melody, if we could turn back the clock to a time when purchasing power wasn't such, particularly the loss of purchasing power, wasn't such an important issue for households, not just in the United States, but in virtually every country with a fiat currency. On your point, less educated women have seen their wages rise as their male counterparts have fallen. But women are still less likely to be in the workforce than men, hold far fewer leadership roles, and in many cases are paid less for similar types of work. Now, establishing financial stability is no longer a prerequisite for sex or even fatherhood, and 40% of U.S. babies are now born out of wedlock. That's a stark figure.
Yes.
David Autor, an economist at MIT, said, an ironic consequence of the sexual revolution is that by making sex outside of marriage safer and more permissible, it may also have reduced the incentive for people to marry. Yeah. At the same time, unmarried fathers aren't faced with the same societal expectation that they provide financially for their children. They don't feel as a burning need to work. Interesting.
It is. And you know what? The only reasons that we've seen these wages rise for women is because they're increasing the minimum wage. It isn't trickle down.
Yeah, right.
It's, let's force the $15 minimum wage. This is what's causing these So a lot of these changes that we're seeing aren't real, aren't from true basic fundamentals. And this is the one I don't get when they talk about how men have also been disproportionately impacted by high incarceration rates and opioid epidemic. Why would they be using these numbers to impact this report that men are losing their place in the workplace? If they pull these men out, this report out, would it increase that number or decrease?
Well, I think the point, at least how I'm looking at it, Melody, is that because there's so many more men incarcerated, so many more men who are struggling with opioid addiction, that's forced them out of the workplace and has already impacted the numbers. And in my mind, that's a reason, if not a big reason, for that disparity. I'm not sure. I may be misreading it, but that's, to me, it seems intuitive that, if you take enough of one gender out of the workplace, other things being equal, because women tend to have joined the workforce more recently, their average wage is going to be lower than the men who've been in for a longer period of time. That's an oversimplification, but that's how I view that.
Well, here's something interesting. Cubans are apparently ratifying a new socialist constitution, Dave.
How about it? Didn't take long for the post-Castro era. More things change, more they remain the same. We're going to run into a break in less than a minute, but Cubans appear to have overwhelmingly ratified a new constitution that enshrines the one-party socialist system as irrevocable, while instituting only modest economic and social changes. 80% of the almost 9 million registered voters cast ballots. The results expected later today. There's no exit polling in Cuba, but citizens could observe the count after the polls closed in their neighborhoods. Overwhelming results in favor of this new constitution.
Hey, we're heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We just wanted to finish out, not too much. Of course, we all know banks are making fees, tons of money on Americans that still exist going to the bank and so forth, even though they're laying and closing branches and so forth. And I read today that these banks off of the tax credits last year have just made billions. Their profits increased 44%. So when you want to know who those tax, did your paychecks increase by 44%? I don't think so. Did your tax refund increase by 44%? I don't think so. And that's an incredible number when I saw that due to the tax.
Well, and remember, in a related sense, in terms of banking profits, that the credit card divisions are more profitable than ever. You know, remember that as Americans, i.e. your own individual, debt, personal debt levels increase, you know, those credit cards, which, if you're not paying off at the end of every month, 21%+ annualized interest rates, that's going right into the pockets of those bankers. And it's at your expense, ladies and gentlemen, at your expense.
Well, the report I saw, the 44% was targeted, of course, and maybe it was overall, but they said due to the tax reform, it was 44%. Mm. That's an incredible amount. But we wanted to talk a little bit about the newsletter that's coming out today and then what the article you wrote about. Do people really care about budgets anymore, budget deficits?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of the evidence out there is maybe surprising. You know, to paraphrase the classic early 70s song about time, what time it is, by the pop band Chicago, does anybody know what our national debt is today? Does anybody really care? Well, Warren Buffett, the consummate paper market capitalist, released his annual letter to his shareholders on Saturday. In it, he has a lesson for those who regularly preach doom because of government budget deficits. That lesson is, Buffett admits that he himself was one of those individuals, although he's no longer so. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
No, but there was a Felix Simon pointing out that Buffett was fortunate to begin investing with a low amount. And I'm not a fan of Buffett. I mean, when you're part of the elite and everything, and he's gotten a lot of deals and everything else. I mean, it's not that difficult. But anyway, that's just how I view it. If you go back and look at his, so I'm not a fan of Buffett, but some things he does come out and he says things that are interesting.
Well, he said a couple of things that I left out of the newsletter article. I think it because it angered me so and sort of detracted from our mission at Discount Gold and Silver. But $115 basically at the ripe old age of 11. The period when he began investing, was a stunning run-up to World War II and America's debt-to-GDP ratio. In 1942, for example, it was 48%. By 1946, the war's immediate aftermath, it was 119%. Now, the U.S. did well in a financial sense in its first century and a half. Then, over the course of the last 77 years, 77 being, Buffett's age, American policymakers found more and more ways to increase our national debt to the tune of 40,000%. As it turns out, there's little, if any, evidence from 240 years of American history, Melody, that the level of the national debt has ever really mattered. The U.S. prints its own currency and can borrow as much as it likes, and it does, and increasingly from domestic investors. As suggested by Buffett, deficit hawks have preached doom for decades. However, they've never been proven right.
Well, I guess that's why the old rules are kind of being rejected among the liberals and moderates and conservatives and everybody else, all the, you name them, the Democrats, Republicans, independents, politicians, economists, and individuals, except us.
I know, right. There is that small exception group. You know, well, another writer, Neil Irwin, sure thinks so. You know, writing in yesterday's Sunday New York Times, Irwin pointed out three things that have happened so far this year. The IMF's former chief economist, again, another institution we're not fond of, but notably, Olivier Blanchard argued that for countries like the U.S., high public debt isn't necessarily a problem. To people who follow the IMF, it was, you know, as if a former pope came out with an endorsement of the devil. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that new provocative and contentious congresswoman, you know, indicated the openness to the modern monetary theory. You know, that's the idea that public spending doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, constrained by any tax revenues.
Of course.
And interestingly, President Trump delivered, you know, an 82-minute long State of the Union speech a week or so ago that included near exactly zero references to the words debt or budget deficit. And I'll add a fourth related thing in a minute.
Well, yeah, it really is amazing that everybody just denies and turns away because they know what the problem is. And if anybody ever would address the debt or anybody would address the budget deficit, that just might make the stock market reverse itself. And gee whiz, maybe that would also help gold go higher. But oh my gosh, we can't have any of that. But this guy Irwin also claims, rightly so, he thinks that, well, for over a century, the primary American economic mantra held the fiscal responsibility was inherently good and national debt was a monster to be feared. Till he took us off the gold standard. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Well, now the intellectual and political currents are flowing. I mean, gushing, really, in the opposite direction. You know, a year after Trump's elections, Republicans pursued their agenda of tax cuts, benefited the most by large, profitable corporations and the wealthiest Americans. You know, that's adding an estimated $1.9 trillion at a minimum to the national debt over the next 10 years. And in a rare moment of bipartisanship, an otherwise highly divided Congress subsequently approved, and by a significant margin, higher military and non-defense discretionary spending without doing the unpopular work of paying for it. The old theories held that high deficits and debt should have caused interest rates and inflation to rise, and government borrowing should have crowded out capital from the private sector. Sort of, you know, post-World War II economics 101, Melody. Well, at a minimum, Irwin suggests the old rules simply don't apply in a world that has free-flowing capital, an aging population, and stubbornly low inflation and interest rates.
Well, perhaps these rules accurately depict how economics work when a country can borrow it in its own currency?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question. How did everyone get so comfortable with debt? I mean, the U.S., you know, gross national debt now passed $22 trillion. Over 105% of GDP, 67,000 plus per citizen. You know, the debt of all national governments across the earth, 66 trillion. And that's just national governments. The debt of state and local governments throughout the U.S. alone exceeds another 3 trillion, plus unfunded liabilities of public pension plans in the U.S., over 6.5 trillion. Americans' personal debt has spiraled out of control too. It now exceeds $19.5 trillion. That's another 93%+ of GDP and 59,000+ per citizen. It's just astounding. Irwin notes that the conventional wisdom of both parties was that fiscal conservative was the meaningful part of why.
Gee, tell us how Americans really feel about deficits, Dave.
Hey, just, you know, about pretty much the way they feel about debt, their personal debt. According to a new survey conducted last month by Pew, Americans' to-do list for the president and the new 116th Congress spans the economy, health care costs, education, preventing terrorism, all cited as top priorities by majorities of Americans. But listen to this. Deficits aren't among the top 10 of those priorities. Perhaps that helps to explain, at least in small part, why our elected reps in Congress don't seem to care either, and possibly never did, or at least not as much as the, you know, they've put on over the years. Improving the economy, 70% remains among the public's highest priorities in early 2019, but, you know, its prominence has waned significantly in recent years. You know, as recently as 8 years ago, 2011, following the Great Recession, 87% called it a top priority. However, and here's the big one here, just 48%, less than a majority, say reducing the deficit should be a top priority for the president and Congress this year. Now, that's unchanged from last year, but a notable 24 percentage points lower than in 2013. In 2013, 72% of the public said reducing the deficit should be a top priority. That was 81% of Republicans, 65% of Democrats.
So when you have an economy that seems to be, you know, moving, I mean, it has improved. I mean, no doubt about it. People, you know, but there's still a lot of people that are having problems and difficulties and, you know, depending on where you're at on the scale of things. Do people put the deficit perhaps with their lack of understanding? Do they group it in the economy? We want to see an improvement in economy. Do they include deficits and in that as an, or is it?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, because there's no doubt that people's reactions or feelings about certain policies, public policies in particular, depends upon how you ask the question. But I think the answer in this case is Pew asked specifically, and respondents gave specific answers, differing levels of priority with respect to the economy, which in my mind is more of a general, you know, catch-all phrase, and budget deficits, which I believe is more specific. And I think that's telling. Now, you know, according to Irwin, you know, there's this politically homeless group that consists of those who, you know, they see a huge risk in the way that both parties embrace deficit spending. People like us that discount gold and silver. You know, in 2011, Erskine Bowles, who co-chaired a committee aimed at long-term deficit reduction, predicted that a fiscal crisis could arrive in 2 years. Well, that didn't happen then, but Bowles believes that in the coming generations, there are going to be regrets, we believe big ones, over the current era of large deficits, even in a time of economic strength, relatively speaking. Erskine said, "I'm confident that many Americans will wonder why didn't those old guys make some of these tough decisions 20 to 30 years ago?" Ladies and gentlemen, Melody's favorite mantra, call Discount Gold and Silver today at 1-800-375-4188.
There was another interesting percentage where it said just 48% say reducing the deficit should be a top priority. When you look at everything else in this country, everything is split. When you look at 50% of the population that gets a government check, and then you have the other 48% who pay for it, it's kind of like, again, this is another how split our country is. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's almost always right down the center. I mean, even and it's just interesting how now, again, are these questions geared to create that type of a, you know, percentage and so forth? You know, I don't know, but and I just thought that was kind of interesting, particularly.
It is. I agree with you.
Yeah, and we see that in so many of our, you know, when they do polls and surveys and so forth, split right down the center, and it's usually those and, you know, those two separate groups. And and you know, again, we talk about the economy. We still have million Americans that have been jobless for a year or more. The hardcore unemployed. Some of the causes for this unemployment is a lack of skills. We talked about drug habits earlier. We talked about felony records, people that are in prison or have been in prison. But there's another largely overlooked reason. Many of these unemployed people simply can't or won't go where the jobs are. Increasing numbers of experts say the concentration of wealth in big cities, along with the rise of automation, putting these low-wage jobs out of the physical reach of many. Often they live on the outskirts of cities. A lot of them don't have access to public transportation. And we, again, these are problems where you still have millions of people that are not working. 800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave. It's great to have you back today.
Good to be back.
We missed you. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe. Good night. And God bless.
Bye-bye.
That's too bad.